Okay, today we're going to be speaking about some halachas that relate to the end of Shemitah. Okay, and two main groups. The first group is called Shemitah's Kesafim, and that is that at the end of the Shemitah year, people who have lent out money, the lenders, must be shamoit. They have to withdraw their right to demand the payment. And basically, if they're not going to ask people for money, then the person may actually never give it to them. So that's their mitzvah, is to be shamoit, to withdraw, and to not demand money from the person who owes it to them. And Chazal call this Shemitah's Kesafim, Shemitah of money. That mitzvah, that part of Shemitah, is not a mitzvah tuli b'aretz. It's not a land-based mitzvah, and it applies, therefore, Eretz Yisrael and the Chutz La'aretz. Nowadays, the whole Shemitah's Kesafim is the Rabbanan, but it applies equally to Eretz Yisrael and to Chutz La'aretz. So it's a part of Shemitah that people in Chutz La'aretz do just the same as they do in Eretz Yisrael. The person the lender has to not ask for the money. It doesn't apply to wages that somebody owes somebody, or if you bought something on credit in a store, or other obligations. It's only for loans, either for a regular loan, like I lend you $1 and I want to come collect it, or if I have one of these obligations I mentioned before, and you change it into a loan. We call it Zakhtam of Milva. We change it. We say, okay, we made a cheshbon, and we said, okay, you know, you owe me this and this and this, and now I'll give you a big bill at the bottom. Then it turns into a loan, and then it's included in the halachot of Shemitah's Kesafim. Okay? there's two main parts of the mitzvah, and that is the lender cannot ask for repayment, and that's one part. And the second is, if the borrower offers to pay, then the lender has to verbally say that he does not want it. It's the mitzvah that I will not take payment from you. I do not want your payment now that Shemitah is over. If I should have mentioned, it happens, I said, at the end of the Shemitah year. If the borrower says, if after the lender says, I know it's Shemitah, Shemitah ended and I don't want the money from you, if he says he still wants to pay, then the lender can take it. I mean, he has a mitzvah to not ask for the money, and if the person offers it, he has to say, no, it's Shemitah ended, and therefore I don't want to take it from you. So he has to verbally refuse the money. But if the person says, afal pi kan, I want to pay anyhow, then he is able to accept it. And the Maaseh, the Chazal tell us that the person should offer to pay. The borrower should offer to pay. And he could. If he wants to do it even nicer, he should say this is a present. It's not a repayment. It's a present. But the lender should not ask for it. And if the person offers it to him, he should turn it down. Now the Sefer Chinuch says that the reason for this mitzvah is to teach us to be generous to people. Meaning, you lend somebody money and to be generous and let them keep it, and have bitachon that the Baruch Shalom is going to take care of us and give everybody what they deserve. So just like during Shemitah, when it is Shemitah, we let people, if you live in Eretz Yisrael and you have trees, you let people take the fruits. So we're learning to let people take things from you and not feel so possessive, because that Hashem is taking care of you in the end. You're going to get what you deserve no matter what. And so too, the same thing with a loan, we say, Hashem, if he doesn't pay me back, that's fine, and Hashem will take care of me. Obviously, it's a lesson in bitachon for the person, that to not to think of his own ideas of what is it that makes sense financially, but rather say, listen, Hashem said I shouldn't collect the money, I won't collect the money, and that itself will build in the person extra levels of bitachon, that he knows where his money comes from. Now, that's the mitzvah of Shemitah's Kesafim. So what happened was that because of that, instead of the intended outcome, which is that people would keep on lending money, but they would then not collect from it, which is what Hashem wanted. That's what the Torah wants for people to do. Is what happened was people were saying, okay, I won't collect the money, but I won't lend it either. It came towards the end of Shemitah, people would stop lending money because they didn't want Shemitah something to come into play. They didn't want that to happen. So that's even more serious. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa to lend money to people also. So Hillel is masakin something called prosbul, the prosbul allows a person to collect the loan, but the real goal was not to let him collect the loan. The real goal was that since it would let him collect the loan, therefore people would lend money in the first place. People wouldn't stop this lending of money. So the din of prosbul is related to the din that there's a din even before Hillel came along called Moshesh Doros of Lebezin, which is that someone who wants to collect the loan can give over his shtar, give over his loan documents to Bezdin, and have Bezdin collect it for him. That's allowed. even after Shemitah. So principle is similar to that. And it's a very small document where the person writes that he wants Bezdin to collect for him. And once he does that, then he can act with as long as if regular. He can do whatever he wants to. He's allowed to collect it as if it was a regular year. Okay, now, there's different questions or issues having to do with how much this principle has to be like a Moshe's traversal of the Bezdin. Exactly. So it ends up with a few practical applications as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says that you should make a prosbo with a bezin that's Mamuna HaTzibur, that everybody knows about. It's a public bezin, and they know the halachos of Shemitah and prosbo like a serious bezin. The Ramah says the minig is that any three people could serve as that bezin. Okay, in Lamaisa, so in fact we pass like Ramah that you could do it. You could any three people could be the signers on the prosbo. But in practice, the series Bezdin is going to have, and many others will, have Bezdins that will, formal Bezdins, series formal Bezdin, which will set itself up to allow people to sign principles under their direction. Okay, now, in a typical, regular Din Torah, the Dayanim of a Bezdin are not allowed to be related to the people involved in a case. The Dayan can't be related to one of the people who's involved in the court case. And the Achronim talk about whether that same thing applies to Prosbul also. Is there a restriction that the Dayanim can't be related? And Dayan Weiss says you could make all on that. Most people do like that, which is that it doesn't make a difference if the Dayanim are related to, people involved who are signing Prosbul, or who the Prosbul is, so to speak, against. And the Ramah says that the lender does not have to come before the Bezin. In the usual interior, you have to come to the Bezin. You can't just, have them judge the case without you there. But the Ramah says that you can, in the case of principle, you could do it not in front of the Bezin. Again, the CRC will be having signings, so people can show up, will actually be able to present themselves in front of the Bezin. But the Ramah says you're not mukhid. Now, there's another rule about a principle is that it only works if the borrower owns land. So that means is if you lend money to someone who doesn't own land, then principle is not going to work. So the thing is that if the lender has land, he can give a piece of that land to the borrower against the person's will, so in order to be able to make the principle be effective, even if the borrower has no interest in that. Okay? Now, if neither the borrower or the lender owns a piece of land, like think of two teenagers, neither of them owns a piece of land, then they should speak to a rabbi about to find out if and how they can write a prosbul. Okay? Other little details about a prosbul are, it could be written it's for all kinds of loans, whether they have a shtar or not, whether there's a written version, a record of that loan that it works. You have to write the prosbul before the end of Shemitah, and it only works for loans that happened before the prosbul was written. So if you write the prosbul on the 15th day of Elul, let's say, before Shemitah, that's before Shemitah ends, but then on the 20th day of Elul, you lend money to somebody else, that money will not be covered by the prosbul. Okay, so that was our first main topic, and our other topic has to do with the Arba Minim for Sukkahs that comes right after Shemitah ends. So there are four Minim, and we'll do them in the following order. The Arava is a simple piece of wood. It has no Kedusha Shvias to it at all, and therefore there's no rules about buying it and cutting it and selling it. It has no restrictions like that. It has no rules about those taking possession of it and selling it. There may be rules about, I wonder, I have to think about that, whether there are rules about pruning, but I don't know. Anyhow, but you're not allowed to do melacha on a rubber tree, except if it's going to keep the tree from dying, so that actually may affect whether you're allowed to do how you cut them off. But if you're cutting them off for your use, to use them for harvest, then you'd be allowed to do that. Okay, that's the simplest one of them. Okay, now, we spoke once beforehand that, and now move to Hadassim, that plants that are sold specifically for fragrance have Kedusha Shvias, and one could argue that Hadassim qualified for that, because maybe not so common here in the United States, but in Eretz Yisrael, which is, if they're coming from there, it's very common that Sephardim use them as a b'sam from Mitzvah Shabbos, so they're using it specifically for fragrance. That's why they buy it. That would, if you just knew that piece of information, you would say that Hadassim would have Kedusha Shvias, which means is that they're half court. You can't buy and sell them in a regular manner. You can't waste them or ruin them. You know, the regular rules of things with Kedusha Shvi'is. That's what we would think on our own, or we might think on our own. But in a little bit of a different context, our Sumerach says that if you cut something off the ground for a mitzvah, then that's not considered food and does not have Kedusha Shvi'is to it. Okay, so according to our Sumerach, if you cut a hadassim to use on Sukkos, which is what most of the ones would be, then they wouldn't have Kedusha Shvi'is, and they're not like the regular hadassim that are cut off for their fragrance. These are as if different because they're cut off for the mitzvah, and they wouldn't have Kedusha Shvi'is. I should have said, of course, that all of our discussion here about the Arminim is about things from Eretz Yisrael. That should have been obvious, in which case Aravas is really unlikely when you get Aravas from Eretz Yisrael, or I guess people in Eretz Yisrael have to think about that. Okay, our third of the Arminim is the Esrig. Lots of Esrig can come from Eretz Yisrael, and the ones that are used that we would see in the United States, or in lots of other places, probably every place, the Esrig can come from farms that are Shemesh Shvias. They keep Shvias in the traditional, good old-fashioned manner, and they have Kedusha Shvias. Okay, what I mentioned before about the Or Sameach, who says if you cut it for the mitzvah, it doesn't have Kedusha Shvias, he said that doesn't apply to, he specifically says it doesn't apply to an Esrig, because the din is that the Esrig is only kosher if it's edible. So the din that when you cut it for the mitzvah is requiring you that it be considered a food, even if you did it for the mitzvah. So what I said before from the Or Sameach doesn't apply. So Esrig would have Kedusha Shvias, and typically, the Esrogim, again, the farmers are ones who are keep Shvias, and their Esrogim are harvested and distributed using the Oitz Vezin system. If you remember, the Oitz Vezin system is where fruit are hefker, and really everyone can take them, but it's not realistic. You know, from where I live, how on earth am I going to get this free Esrog that I could just pick up off the field in some place in Eretz Yisrael? Well, even if I lived in Eretz Yisrael, who's going to go out to get them? So Bezdin appoints people to collect them and to put them into boxes and send them to town and distribute them, and Bezdin could do all that work for the tzibur. They're doing it for everybody else, and then they can charge for their work, and they can charge for the transportation and for the packaging. They can't charge for the esrog, but they can charge for everything else. And most esrogim that are going to be sold for shmita from Eretz Yisrael are going to go through the Oitz Bezdin system, but of course they're going to have kedusha shvias. The Oitz Bezdin is just a way of me accessing those. That produce, which is really hefker, it's really as Kedusha Shvias. Well, here's an obvious question, which is, one of the dinim of Kedusha Shvias is, you're not allowed to take things with Kedusha Shvias out of Eretz Yisrael. So, how could it be that Esrog from Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha Shvias is going to end up in Chicago? How's that going to happen? You're not allowed to export it. Now, the Chazanish says that when I said, you shouldn't do it. Okay, I mean, he says, which is, we know that if you did do it, if you did export it improperly, then it's still mutter. It has Kedusha Shvias, and you could still use it for the mitzvah. But the question is it right for the Bezdin to export it in the first place, when the din is things with Kedusha Shvias are not allowed to be exported? So I mentioned the Chazanish is Nachman, but many others are Nekel, and say that you can export it, either straight out or on the special conditions, such as you have to have a guy do the exporting, or you can export it out tonight that you bring it back after Sukkot to do the mitzvah biur. But in practice, there will be esrogim, shmita esrogim, brought to Chutz Aretz that will have Kedusha Shvias through the Oitz Bezdin system, and they many will say that they need to be sent back to Yisrael before the time of biur, which I believe is in Shvat. Okay, our last of the four minim to talk about is a lulav. Now, the Gemara says that a lulav has Kedusha Shvias. Okay, that's the Gemara says it straight out that lulav has Kedusha Shvias. Now, some people mention that at the end of the Gemara changes its mind. Or maybe the din is not like that line of the Gemara, one with two different versions, and it may not hold like that. Okay, but let's go with the assumption that the Gemara says, which is what the Gemara says, does say straight out that lulav has Kedusha Shvias. Why would lulav have Kedusha Shvias? It's a branch. Nobody eats lulav branches. Why on earth, why do they have Kedusha Shvias? So Rashi says that the reason why they would have Kedusha Shvias is the rule is what decides when they have Kedusha Shvias is not only if they're edible. If they're food like, they're like food, they also have Kedusha Shvias, and the rule is it's things that are hanasan ubiru shava. If the hanoi you get, the benefit you get from using this object, happens at the same time as the destruction of the item, then that's considered had kedusha shvius, because that's like food. Food, when I eat an apple, the same time it gets destroyed. I mean, when I'm chewing it, it's the same time I'm getting the benefit, which is I'm getting to eat it. They go together. They happen together at the same time. So the Gemara, and therefore Rashi says is that a lulav is like that, because lulavim are used as brooms. Okay, you know, open up the fan, think about the lulav as a fan, open up like a fan, and you sweep it. So the benefit you get is that you use it as a broom to sweep, but also that, you know, bangs up the broom, and eventually it gets ruined from all the use. So the use of sweeping and the destruction of the lulav, the eventual destruction of the lulav, happen simultaneously, and therefore, that's what the Gemara means when it says that lulav and kedusha shvius. Okay, well, now that we understand that that's why lulav should have kedusha shvius in the first place, so Rishon Zalman says, he says, that's fine to explain the Gemara, but that has nothing to do with us nowadays, because in the culture that we live in, or at least in, you know, where most Jews live in, nobody uses a lulav as a broom. Nobody uses brooms, like, makes them into brooms. So therefore, he says, even according to the what the Gemara says, that lulav na kedusha shvius, and even if we say that that's the conclusion of the Gemara, that lulav na kedusha shvius, that Gemara is not relevant to us, because for us, lulav are not used as brooms, and therefore, they are not Asam Yerun Shava, and they do not have Kedusha Shvius. Okay, a few other little points to mention that have to do with the end, or after Shemitah, actually. And that is like this. The rule is for vegetables. Vegetables are considered, the way we decide if a vegetable is the produce of Shvius or not, it depends on when they were harvested. If they're harvested during Shemitah, then they have Kedusha Shvius. So, therefore, the rules, similarly, if you harvest a cucumber the day after Rosh Hashanah, at the end of Shemitah, I mean, so it's the first days of the eighth year, then it wouldn't have Kedusha Shvius, because it was harvested in the eighth year. Lamaisa, there are some dinim that are like Svichim that apply to certain vegetables all the way until Hanukkah. So that is to say is, even though one might think, the simple understanding would be is that vegetables should be nothing to talk about once the year ends, once Rosh Hashanah comes. In practice, there are certain restrictions that are essentially like Svichim rules, that the vegetables might be usher, that last at different lengths, but could go as long as Hanukkah. Okay, now, in contrast to vegetables, fruits are their year is decided by when they reach a certain stage of growth, Hanata, whether that happened during the seventh year. Well, fruits that had reached that stage during the seventh year are going to be harvested. Many of them are going to be harvested in the eighth year. So Kedusha Shvius will keep on applying to fruits for quite some time. Way past Hanukkah, they'll be applying. Okay, so vegetables will for sure, their times will finish by Hanukkah, but fruits may go for longer. Okay, now, one of the halachas of last thing is that one of the halachas of Kedusha Shvius is that there comes a point when this fruit is not available anymore in the fields, that they're all wiped out, you know, everything's been eaten, and at that point, there's you have to do a mitzvah called biur for any of those leftover fruit that you happen to have in your house, okay? So, for example, the time of biur for grapes and wine is on Pesach of the eighth year. So if a person has wine or grapes from Shemitah, Pesach in, you know, about a year from now, or less than a year from now, at that point he's mechuyav to the mitzvah biur. Okay, now that we talked about it once before I had to do it, but it's one last din of Shemitah that applies even after Shemitah will be over.